by doing something that you're good at, whether it's speaking or creating. If you just put it out there, you just don't know how your life will change.
Even though you might not be getting paid directly, every person is adding value to the Bitcoin world. And you get to help other people. To me, that's like the point of life. I grew a network of people that I never could have imagined, you know, like business owners and entrepreneurs and billionaires. It's like wild. And this never would have happened to me without Bitcoin coming along. I guess your question was, how does someone like know they're on this spiritual? It's just when they've found some sort of like purpose and fulfillment in their life.
Welcome back to the Bitcoin Nova. Don't forget to like and subscribe to my channel so you don't miss any future episodes. Thank you for watching.
I like your shirt.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, no problem.
I love it. It's amazing. And I definitely ordered a bunch more. So I've been wearing them on my shelf.
Nice. Thank you for supporting our store.
Yeah, it's amazing. I love all the different styles you guys offer. I love your shirt.
Thank you.
And I also want to show my husband's shirt that he chose for people if they want to see it. So he chose this one. It's amazing.
Nice. Are we recording now?
I just start recording right away. So yeah.
Make sure I don't say anything wrong.
Oh, yeah. No, you're good. And I don't know why I still have my headphone on. So, I have Neil Jacobs here with me today. He is the founder of FOMO 21 Shop, which is these shirts. And I love all the styles. You have so many. It was so hard to pick when I was going through it. And then this box came in and I had like, I don't know how many. It was like a whole bunch of them. So I'm like, I had to just like narrow it down somehow. I love your shirt, and you're also your company actually, but you're also a marketing strategist. Is that also what you do?
Yeah, I've done marketing for a bunch of different Bitcoin companies, Bitcoin financial services companies, mining companies, all other stuff. Yeah, a lot of
okay. Stuff. Mining companies,
you know, too. Promote conferences.
Okay.
So a lot of, I've had my, my toe dipped in everything and
did you work on the Bitcoin conference in Vegas?
Yeah, so I helped sell tickets for them. I think their lead ticket affiliate. So promo code FOMO will get you a discount.
Nice, yes.
The conference or basically any conference in the space. So
okay, that's amazing. That's really very widespread. That's incredible. So did you start this FOMO 21 shop before, like a long time ago, before you got into the marketing space, or did this start more recently?
So this is like 3.5 years old, the FOMO 21. So the way it started, my now business partner, Ryan, reached out to me. So I used to do this thing called Clubhouse. Do you know what that is by any chance?
I think I do, but refresh my memory.
It was basically Twitter Spaces before Twitter Spaces. It wasn't part of Twitter, but there was this app. Well, it still exists today.
Okay.
I was running Bitcoin rooms every morning for like 2.5 years. And when it first started, there was hundreds of people would show up. Every morning, I'd open the rooms at 6:30 a.m. Eastern time, and you'd have people, you know, from Europe, Asia, just waking up on the East Coast. And I was doing that for a while. And like I said, my business partner, Ryan, he's like, I've been following you on Clubhouse and on Twitter. And you've been part of my orange pill story. And I've been in the apparel space for over 20 years. I think we could, you know, I could do this in the Bitcoin world, and I think you'd be a good person to partner with. So I didn't even know who he was at the time. And a bunch of people like messaged me all the time with their ideas. But we talked for like an hour, and I said, yeah, I'm in.
That's awesome.
And now 3.5 years later, it's a real business. So
yeah. And it's not just like that. It's some kind of t-shirts. They feel really good. Like they're super comfortable. Thank you. Like the material, the quality, it just feels nice. Like it's not like you're putting on an itchy t-shirt and you're like, oh, it has Bitcoin on it, so I'll wear it, you know?
Yeah. So there's, you know, everyone has a preference. Some people like softer t-shirts, some people like thicker t-shirts, whatever. But Yeah, we use like a pretty, we use high quality t-shirts. You know, we could use stuff that's less than and make a little more money, but you know, we want people to feel good and we want people to come back and buy more stuff. So it just makes sense for us to use like a better quality.
I got so stuck on the site looking for a shirt for myself. Or actually, my husband picked his shirt. I picked my shirt, and thank you for sending these. But then when he saw the box come in the mail, he's like, "Oh, are those the shirts?" I'm like, "No, those are the other shirts." And he's like, "Yeah, you just got like a whole box full for yourself." And I didn't get to look to see if you have kids stuff, but I know my daughter always gets a little jealous when she looks at me and she's, you know, she sees the Bitcoin stuff and she always wants to have like a mini me version of whatever I'm wearing.
That's awesome.
I do have to look back and see if there's kids, right? Do you have that?
Yeah, we have youth, toddler, infant, like onesies. I don't know how old your daughter is, but we have for like all ages.
Okay, yeah, she's like, my kids are not in the little kid range. They're like between 11 and 14, or almost at 10 and 14, my God.
So we do have youth size, but they, you know, they might fit into small adults. I don't know. It depends how big your kids are, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, my kids run tall, you know, but at the same time, they can grow into them, and then you don't have to worry about them growing out of it and, you know, having to get rid of the shirt. So, yeah, I always like to buy a little bit bigger for them because they grow like weeds. Yeah. So I'm definitely going to do that next. I want to check out, you know, the kids section. So I'm going to do that for sure. So did you, what was I going to ask you? So how did you, like, you were early into Bitcoin, obviously, because you were doing this Clubhouse thing. How did you get started with Bitcoin? Like, who told you about it? How did you get Orange Belt?
It's funny that people say I'm early to Bitcoin just because I was here like 4 or 5 years ago. And that,
okay.
I mean, I was actually a lot longer than that, but it's funny. Just every new group of people that comes in, it's like, you were so early.
Yeah.
And so people are going to say that about you. Mm-hmm. You know, in five years, you know. So it's funny how that works.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, just hearing about spaces, because just thinking, I mean, I thought the Twitter space thing was relatively new because I've been on X for a few years. But I mean, I talked to someone else recently. You probably know him because you were doing these spaces before it was even a Twitter thing. But John Ficori is someone I talked to.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he was talking about how he ran these Twitter spaces. And I was around during that time, but I had no idea these spaces were going on, and it would have been kind of fun to join them. And you were doing that even before it was even on Twitter, I guess, you know, so that's what makes me feel like, even though I was kind of in the space, I was very much lured onto the crypto side of things at the time. And I was just, my attention was diverted so much. So I wasn't a Bitcoin maxi. Yeah. You know, so I think that took a little bit more time.
Yeah. There was even, I don't know if you remember on Twitter spaces, there's like a Cafe Bitcoin thing that used to happen. That was actually a Clubhouse thing first, Cafe Bitcoin. So it all kind of like came from that. So it's funny. So, yeah. Back to your original question. So I first bought Bitcoin in 2013. I didn't understand it at all. I posted a screenshot a while back on Twitter. I think I first bought Bitcoin, it was like $120 per Bitcoin, but then it like tripled in value. So I sold it all. And I first heard about it. I think I read about it somewhere. And then a friend of mine told me that he was using Bitcoin to buy wheat. It's like, yeah, I bought like $1,500 worth of weed with Bitcoin, which is 15 Bitcoin.
With Microseed, you can engrave your entire seed phrase onto a durable titanium washer. It's the ultimate backup. Simple, indestructible, giving you true peace of mind and knowing your seed phrase is secured for life. Use my link in the description to get your kit.
Check out Satoshis. So many new styles and fully customizable. Use my referral link in the description or in the comments for 10% off your order. Don't forget to check out The Bitcoin Advisor for multi-sig custody solutions to store your Bitcoin, inheritance planning, and Bitcoin. Peace of mind.
My God.
Which is now, you know, over $1.5 million.
Right.
And that was 2013. That's when I first like bought on Coinbase, because it wasn't that Coinbase started in 2013 and there wasn't many things available. back where to buy. And, you know, it tripled. I had a traditional like finance mind, like, oh, I'm 300% or 200%. I'm selling this thing. You know, my background's as a CPA. So I started my career as like accountant. So I had like a different type of framework of thinking. And to me, it was just basically just speculating on something. And I didn't really know that, do my research and know about it. In 2015, 2016, got back into it, kind of started hearing about, oh, it's a hedge against like out of control governments and things like that, but still never really took the time to understand it. And I started trading all the shit coins. And now, you know, that wasn't good. Probably ended up breaking even, but if I just would have bought and hold Bitcoin, obviously that would have been a lot better. Then in 2019, I kind of looked at Bitcoin again. And I was like, all right, I'm going to allocate some of my net worth to this. And I guess my orange pilling moment, it's funny because I say I first bought in 2013. It's like, oh, so you're I wasn't orange pilled probably till like 2019. When I started listening, there's this well-known, well, I don't know how well-known it is anymore, but podcast series that a guy named Bitcoin Tina did on with Bitcoin Magazine. And Tina stands for There Is No Alternative. It's a pseudonym. It's a guy. Yeah. And I'm now good friends with him, which is funny because at the time it was just this like pseudonymous guy on the internet I used to listen to.
And that's funny because I think that John Ficuri mentioned Bitcoin Tina in those spaces that he would hold. So that's funny. That's another guess that you're now friends with him. And, you know, that's just crazy.
Yeah. Bitcoin Tina had a very big impact on my life, which is kind of funny now because he's kind of less of a Bitcoin bull than he used to be. I don't know if you heard any of his stuff, but he still holds Bitcoin. But it's just he's had his mindset has changed. But at the time, it really helped me see the long term thesis about Bitcoin. So it's like, all right, I'm putting 20% of my net worth into this. And then I'd listen to that same podcast again. I'm like, oh, I'm putting 30%. Oh, I'm 40%. And then in early 2020, I read a book called The Price of Tomorrow by Jeff Booth. And that really also changed my life. I read that book. And at the time, like I said, I was an accountant. So, you know, when I was reading that book, it was talking about the pace of, you know, technology and AI coming. And it's funny because like, that, I guess he started writing it maybe 6 years ago now. People weren't really talking about AI then, like they are now, obviously. But I had this like, oh my God, my job as an accountant is going to be, I don't know if completely like obsolete, but, you know, I don't know the future of my job security. Now, fast forward all these years, I've gained a lot of other skills, you know, doing marketing for companies and things like that. But at the time, I was like, okay, Bitcoin then became an insurance policy for me. So now it's like, all right, now I'm like 60% in Bitcoin, right? And then I keep reading more and more. And all of a sudden it's like, oh my God, I have no more money left. Well, the Bitcoin is the money, right? I have everything. I sold like almost every single stock I owned. I have delayed buying a house for 5-6 years, you know? And yeah, and now I'm like in it. And it's basically, not only did I build my, you know, a strong conviction, but it's a spiritual journey for me. And that might sound like cuckoo to a lot of people, but you know, it's like 2013, you didn't get it. 2015, 2016, you didn't get it. It's like 2019, you idiot. Like it's staring you in the face.
But you kind of need to go through that because it's like, and that's why I like to talk about where people come from because, you know, I felt that way. I felt like it was a spiritual journey for me. You know, a lot of ideals get broken down and just like things you think about the world and just, you know, just things you think about yourself just evaporate. But I noticed that it wasn't I thought it was I was crazy, you know, and I didn't realize that it happens to so many people. And, you know, just thinking about, you know, where people come from and their journey and just what kind of person were you before you found Bitcoin? Were you a curious person? Were you just speculating? What kind of background did you come from that you came across it? But most of us did find Bitcoin and, you know, you don't realize what it's going to become. You're just kind of playing with this thing that you think is some kind of just new technology. You know, you don't realize, like Jeff Booth even said, it's a protocol. It's not even a technology. It's something else. But I just think that it's the journey you go through. You think you're trying to beat inflation. You think you're trying to, you know, it's like the stock market's a gamble. Like people are just investing in the stock market and it really is just like a, you know, a casino in a way, you know, but I think that you're trying to beat this inflation and then you just realize what Bitcoin is along the way. And, you know, as time goes on, the more people that realize what Bitcoin is, like you did have people like you or anybody who bought early would sell it not knowing what they were holding. And that's normal. You know, it's something that people shouldn't beat themselves up about for doing because, and it doesn't mean you shouldn't get back in it. You know, it doesn't mean because you're jaded or you bought Bitcoin a long time ago, once you actually get orange pill and you realize what this technology means and how it's changing the world, how it's reshaping everything, like I would think AI is similar to Bitcoin, how it's a whole new animal. And you looking at your job and thinking, what if it's not around in however many years? It's a crazy thought, you know? So you do just like reading, like learning about Bitcoin combined with learning about this exponential growth of technology is just a whole shift in your reality, you know? And I think I think about that thing with my kids too, because, you know, they're nowhere near going to college, but sometimes you wonder all these schools that people go to learn whatever career path they're going to take, is that career even going to be around by the time they finish college? Yeah,
it's crazy.
Yeah. So it's like, you don't know.
Yeah. And when you think about AI, even where it was a year ago to now is so much ahead. Yeah. I make a lot of AI videos, like marketing videos. I don't know if you've seen any of them, but literally things I do today, I couldn't do 2 months ago.
Right.
So.
Yeah, you know, I did see one. I think it was a McDonald's one, was it? Like a Bitcoin shirt. Yeah, I saw that today.
Yeah, and I whipped that together in like 30 minutes. Right.
Yeah.
Where, you know, pre-AI, how would it taken? Well, one, if I would have get, you know, hire a real person and set like, and the costs and yeah, you just have so much more at your fingertips. Now, it's not easy to like, you still have to put in time and understand. And I tell people that, you know, these videos, they're like, I want to do that. And I'm like, okay. But the problem is you still need like that creativity. Because you need to know what to tell the AI to do. So that's your advantage in the AI world as a human, is how do you prompt the AIs to do what you want to do?
I love that.
Yeah. And, you know, like I was saying with Jeff Booth's book, did you read his book by any chance?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You had him on your show, right? I think I saw that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No. So he really helped me wrap my head around exponentials in technology, right? Because humans generally think linearly and pattern recognition, but we don't see the exponentials. So, you know, I just think AI, like in a year or two from now, I can't even imagine what it's going to be at a year or two from now.
I know. I think I sometimes tell people about this stuff and I think it makes me sound crazy, but I don't think it's too insane to think that in the next 2 years we're gonna see just Tesla bots walking around you know, working at buildings, you know, like kind of, you know what I mean, just sort of like greeting people instead of having somebody at the door would be just a, I just feel like that's not far off just based on how fast it's expanding. And yeah, it's like Jeff has a really crazy way, like a calm way where you actually like want to listen to him talk because he's so, I don't know. He's not like aggressive about it. Just the way he talks, it's very easy to listen to him. And then you can actually absorb his ideas. But I remember hearing him say about the folding a piece of paper, you know, and I think it was a long time ago when I needed my first like video edit. Yeah, I was trying to like put it alongside like how exponential growth works and what Jeff was saying. But it just makes so much sense when you think about the early folds of that paper, you know. It's like we're still in the first early folds of Bitcoin's like halvings, you know, and as these halvings progress, they expand. And just about that paper reaching to the moon, if it could be folded that many times,
I think it's the sun.
The sun. I don't know why I keep saying moon. You're right. It is.
I think if you fold it 50 times, if you could, it would go to the sun. Now, I don't think it's physically possible to fold a piece of paper more than like 7 times, like a typical piece of paper. But yeah, if you could, it would go to this.
And what did you say, 50 times?
I think you said 50 times.
Yeah.
I don't know, but it's regardless of what it is, 30, 50, the moon, the sun, it just shows that our brains don't really think about it. Because most people, you know, 99% of people, it's like, oh, if you fold a piece of paper 50 times, they'll be like, oh, it's like 20 feet high. Or maybe some will say it's like 1,000 feet high. Like, who knows what they'll say? But it's never 90 million miles, right, to the sun.
And even when you first hear that, you think there is no way, like that's not even if you could keep folding it, there's no way that would ever happen. But that's why, our brains can't wrap around it, you know. Well, so, not knowing, even just underestimating Bitcoin and, you know, thinking that at this point, when you don't understand the deflationary schedule of the release of the Bitcoin as it comes out over the years, and just realizing how much adoption is happening, and just to underestimate that growth is it's not crazy when you hear these crazy price valuations. You know, some people think you're insane, but how could you even comprehend how much it could grow in the next 4 years? You know, it's just, you don't know how to actually, even in the next you know, who was it? I was talking to somebody who, it was Peter Dunworth, and he said his brother time locked a Bitcoin into the future. And I thought that was the most insane idea, because a Bitcoin today versus a Bitcoin in the future, and extrapolating it out, he was saying it could be like trillions of dollars worth for that one single Bitcoin. Because when you get to the end of it, the end of the mining, it's going to be one single Satoshi that's mined with all the world's computing power. So, I mean, I just think it sounds nuts, but it's also just really cool to think about.
Yeah. And then it goes to, well, what are those dollars actually worth at that point? So, but I do think that it will still have like tremendous value in today's dollar value, today's purchasing power. You know, there's another example. So the folding paper 50 times. Then another like funny one with like exponentials that I've heard is, would you rather have $1 million today or a penny doubled for the next 30 days? And, you know, the first thing you think is that's stupid, but the penny doubled for 30 days is like over $5 million.
Yeah.
I mean, 31 days would be 10 million.
That's a great example.
Yeah. So that's another way to look at it. Look at Bitcoin, right? In the last year, it was 50,000, 60,000. A year ago, and it doubled, right? It's basically doubled. Although, you know, I think maybe I'm bad luck today, because I think the price is dipping even more. But...
Oh no, I think dips are good luck. So I have I always like to share my chart whenever there's like a scary dip, you know, whenever it's like the red candle, I have those candles turned orange. So it just means buy more when it drops. So it's it's not a scary thought. When you see red, you're not like, oh my God. It's actually like a signal, like, ooh, that's a nice big orange one. I should probably get some extra, you know?
Yeah. And it's so funny, like human psychology with investments, and most people still, you know, look at Bitcoin as an investment. When it goes down, they don't want to buy. When it goes up, they want to buy, which is kind of counterintuitive to things we actually know about in real life and understand. You know, let's say you wanted to buy a Lamborghini, just something crazy, right? And maybe a Lamborghini's like $200,000, and if you saw a brand new Lamborghini on sale for $20,000, you'd buy it in a heartbeat, right? So people just don't understand Bitcoin, but if you understand that Bitcoin is discounted significantly from its actual value, or you know what you perceive as its value, it's like, oh, I gotta buy more of this.
Yeah. And even when people mention things like, I don't completely understand the hash rate, but whenever the hash rate's flying through the roof and going up. And it's like the Bitcoin is way undervalued because the hash rate's going up so high. You know, and there's just so many stories that I find interesting. Like even Jack Dorsey has like a new miner that'll be produced in the US. It's supposed to be some amazing miner that's going to make the hash rate fly. And I think that it's also seeing Bitcoin double, like you said, in the last, what, year? And it's not even in a low interest environment. You know, it's we haven't even hit the low interest, and they usually say Bitcoin thrives in that environment. So this is happening with high interest rates, and it's really mind blowing, actually.
Yeah, and I just gave the example, right, of the penny doubling every year or every day. You know, what if over 30 years Bitcoin doubles every year? Then think about like its value.
Yes.
From starting at 50,000, right?
I'm going to have ChatGPT do that for me after this.
Yeah, no, I mean, I could do it while we're talking, but
yeah.
Yeah, and then just you said, what is hash rate? It's just the computational like power in the network. It's how many miners are running, you know, every basically for mining. It's just they're constantly guessing to try to solve the next block, and each guess is a hash, because it's in mathematics a hash function. So hash rate is just how many hashes per second, per hour, etc., right? So I think, I don't even know what it is right now, but I think worldwide it's something like 9 quintillion,
Jesus Christ,
hashes per second, or 900 quintillion. Wait, I'm gonna look it up right now.
Somebody did comment on one of my videos and said about using the Lord's name in vain, and I do that a lot, so I'm trying to be better about it.
Did I just do it?
No, I did it. Oh. I said
so. It's 901 exahashes per second. So that's 900 quintillion, basically guesses per second.
See, and I'm glad you said that, because I always hear exahash and I think, oh yeah, that's a big number. But when you hear it actually in quintillion. Okay, yeah. that's more puts it more into perspective.
Yeah. So
and early on, that's
10 to the 18th power for anyone else, a quintillion. So.
Yeah, that's
every
ridiculous.
Second.
Every second.
Times 900.
Times 900.
And you know, the way we get that, so we don't actually know the exact amount. It's an estimate based on the difficulty adjustment in Bitcoin. So for anyone that doesn't know, the more people that try to mine, it gets harder, the less people, it gets easier. So based on that adjustment, you could kind of figure out how many guesses hashes are happening per second. So that's how they come up with that number. So it's, wow. It's relatively around that.
Okay. So yeah, based on how many miners are running and how many miners are trying to solve this puzzle, that gives you that number. But early on, people that were mining Bitcoin, you know, at the time that you first bought it, like 2011, 2013, whatever, you were able to mine, I don't know how many computers were running the code, but, you know, you would be able to, these blocks would happen every 10 minutes and somebody would be winning a block, you know, often, you know, because it wasn't like you yeah. had a global amount of computers all competing for these block rewards. So early on, yeah, you would just be running the code and the hash rate, whatever, the exahash per second was so low. And
it wasn't even measured in exahashes. It was lower denominations, right? It was like thousands per second, millions per second, you know, billions, trillions, quadrillions. Now it's quintillions, right?
What comes after exahash then?
What's after a quintillion? I guess a sextillion, I think it's called, or septillion. Oh, I don't know.
I wonder if the word exahash would be like, what's the next word? Yeah.
So, what's after exahash? Let's look it up.
Yeah, because that's probably going to happen.
Okay, so it's zeta hash, which is 10 to the 21st power.
Zeta hash. Yeah. That sounds like an end game right there, Zeta. It sounds like the last letter. It's like, what's after that then? It's like my mind just wants to know, you know, I want to see all of them.
Yeah, which is basically, I guess, yeah, so it's wild. So yeah, it was Zeta sextillion. Sextillion is the next number after quintillion.
It's just so weird. Exa zeta. Yeah.
I mean, we're almost there, right? Because if we're at 900 exahash, that would mean at 1,000 exahash, it becomes 1 sextillion.
How far away do you think we are from that?
What?
How far away do you think we are from that?
Oh, pretty, probably in the next year, I guess.
Wow.
It's going to happen. Well, just if we're at 90% of the way there, right? 900 divided by 1,000.
Yeah, but it's
wild.
Yeah, and I think that's why I was thinking, what's the next one? Because I'm like, it's probably going to switch soon. But I didn't really think it. I haven't really thought about even early days it being in the thousands or millions and what it was actually calculated by. And, you know, but that makes so much sense that it's grown exponentially, you know, since the beginning. And it'll grow faster, you know, and it's more competition and more miners and more stronger miners. And, you know, it's crazy to think, even with how we were talking about AI, you know, Bitcoin is so secure and Bitcoin protects itself from AI and because of its difficulty adjustment, right? So if you have all these insanely strong computers and some kind of new technology that's able to mine faster and faster, it's just going to make it that much harder to solve. And it's just, it could keep folding, right? The folds will keep getting that much bigger faster. You know, it's just going to be an acceleration. So that's crazy to think about.
Yeah.
Mind blowing stuff.
While you were talking and I was paying attention. What?
Yeah. No, I was just saying it's just mind blowing stuff. Just thinking about how.
Yeah.
How it's just mind blowing.
I heard with the. Sorry. No, okay. the last few words cut out. I think there might be a little lag all of a sudden. I don't know what happened.
Probably. But, yeah. I think we were talking at the same time.
Hash rate at the beginning of this year was just under 800 exahash. So now if we're at 900, you got to by the end of the year, we hit that next level. So just in case anyone's curious.
This is cool. This is like my first Zeta Hash interview. I haven't heard of this before, but
which is hilarious because I am not like the most super technical person on Bitcoin mining, but I'm happy I could bring that in.
Yeah, well, most of my conversations, I'm not getting too much into the technical stuff. Like, I understand it, but I'm not a coder. I'm not a technologist. I don't know a lot. I know about editing and videos and stuff like that. That's my extent of it. But I get Bitcoin. I understand it. But I like to hear this stuff. Like, for me, I like to understand the things that a lot of people don't want to take the time to learn and then explain it in a way that they'll understand. So, cause a lot of people in real life, I have my hairdresser. So I talk to a lot of regular people and I talk to them about Bitcoin, but most people that have no clue about technology or Bitcoin or they're older, you know, they don't even know how to use their iPhone. They're asking me for help, you know? So it's just like, they don't understand a lot of things, but to explain it in a way that they would get. And I do find this stuff interesting, but I like to relay the information so that they can, make sense of it in a simple way. But yeah, I would be the one listening to podcasts all these years and listening to the technicals and trying to understand Bitcoin. Even though I don't, explain it the same way. So I explain it in my own words, but I understand pretty much what's going on there. So,
and look, the longer you're in the space and around, the more you'll end up picking up on these things. And, you know, in a few years it'd be like, oh, I'm explaining this to someone. And it doesn't even matter if you're not super technical. You've just been around it long enough that you pick up enough of the basics and understanding. You know, no one's ever going to be an expert on every single part of Bitcoin. And this was like a hard thing for me to, or something I had to learn at the beginning of my Bitcoin journey, is not everyone is an expert on psychology, economics, computer science, cryptography, you know, all these different areas, game theory and incentives, human behavior, all these different things. And that's okay. You know, you don't need to know everything. If there's one thing you want to like specialize in, that's great.
Mm-hmm.
But it's about, you know, we say don't trust, verify. But obviously you can't verify the code. yourself, right? So Bitcoin really isn't about, it's about trust minimization. So you end up finding groups of people who have been around a while, who you think are smart, who you look to, and you're like, oh, if these four people are all agreeing on this, I feel good about this, right? If they're all saying like, this looks good, I feel good about this. And again, that's just for areas that are just outside of your, you know, current understanding. It doesn't mean that you're just trusting anything. It's that there's all these data points over the years that say, okay, this person like knows their shit. I feel good about this.
Right. So. Yeah. And that's what I think with something that you're talking about makes me want to admit something that I'm kind of afraid to admit, but I will do it because it's time. But I'm friends with a bunch of people on X, and they're very smart. And I was actually hosting a space recently about the Bitcoin core debate, or the core knots debate. And I understand what incentives there are for each side and why they don't want to do each thing. So I kind of get it. But again, they know so much on the technical side that I feel like I'm just trying to listen and look at the big picture of things and try to ask questions. But it makes me sort of realize how I'm learning a lot from them, you know, and I know that some of these people are, you know, very, very well knowledged in the space. Like they understand what's happening here with the whole, you know, core thing, how they want to change, you know, to not allow spam on the network and stuff. It's for the health of Bitcoin going forward. But I don't think I think I'm so naive because I was running Bitcoin Core on my computer. And I guess that's running a node. I thought I was running a node. I don't know if that's even running a node. Is it? Okay. So, but I haven't ran it in a while because I kept hearing all these people like about what's going on with Core. And I'm like, should I even be doing that? You know, so I wasn't really running my software lately. I wasn't sure what to do, you know, but I'm just trying to like absorb and think what's happening here. And I know if you don't agree with the implementation going forward, you don't have to do the upgrade. You could just run it, I guess. But so many people are talking about running your own node. And I'm such a... this is the part I don't want to admit. I thought that running a lottery miner that I was running, like a BitAx, I thought that was like running a node. I don't know if that is.
Yeah, well, if you run a miner, you need to be also running a node because you need to be able to like... So mining is just the guessing. Mm-hmm. But how do you guess if you don't know like what's going on in the network and you're not keeping a ledger? So by default, if you're running a miner, you... need to run a node.
So maybe I'm accidentally running a node and I didn't know I was when I set
maybe.
It up.
Well, and also, so Bitcoin miners and nodes, you used to not be able to run a node unless you were mining. And then that was separated at a certain point, I'm pretty sure. Someone's going to like scream and yell like, Neil, you don't know anything about Bitcoin, but I'm pretty sure that's how it started.
We're trying to figure stuff out here.
Yeah, and you know, this whole like knots core debate, you know, I like I admit it, I'm not like super technical person. It's funny because there's people on the like core side who I've looked to for years for things, and I, without a shadow of the doubt, think they want what's best for Bitcoin long term. But I could say the same thing about people on this not side is I think they do too. I think it's gotten really like nasty and people are a little too, I hate to say emotional about it, but that's the word that's coming to my head.
Yeah, I think the same thing. It's hard to, I mean, I feel like I could wrap my head around it like, trying to talk it out, it's mainly like it's not changing Bitcoin, it's just changing the op return or whatever, you know, which I think that is something that I hear all the time, but I'm like, I don't know exactly. I don't know what that means. I think it's the transactions and when you allow ordinals or spam or, you know, ordinals like NFTs on Bitcoin, you're allowing miners to just benefit from an obscene amount of transactions So I think that Core wants to cut that out because they think that it's not good for the health of Bitcoin as a network because you're taking up valuable block space.
Yours are knots, you mean?
Well, I think, see, that's where am I confused? Because I think that Core wants to put the implementation to change it so that there isn't all the spam allowed.
Yeah, but see, this is where like the technical stuff. The people on the knot side would say it's the they're allowing more spam by the things they're doing. I don't even know.
Yeah, it gets confusing. I feel like we need like a clear cut, like what is happening.
But this is the whole thing. Spam is this whole use of the word spam. Again, I'm a Bitcoiner because of the money. So all this other stuff to me is nonsense. However, spam in the traditional sense is like you're sent an email and someone just sends you an email, gets your email somewhere and you know, unsolicited. To call what these people are doing spam to me is a little, it's like a misnomer. They're paying. They're following consensus rules. So calling it spam is also a little weird to me. And I also think long term, it's not going to matter. I think it's only going to really be financial transactions, like really large financial transactions on the network that are going to pay for block space. I guess the argument is, you know, oh, well, it costs more to run a node now. But the way we see technology progressing, right, we're talking about the folding of the piece of paper and exponentials. It's going to be dirt cheap to run a node either way in the future. So I think a lot of this, I'm more of a don't change anything kind of person.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's more where Knots is, right? Yeah.
Yeah. To a certain extent.
Yeah, but I think that don't change anything because sometimes, like, I think that when Ordinals first was, like, discovered that you could do this on Bitcoin, I think it was, sometimes I wonder if whatever Satoshi did or built and left, like, these little doors on purpose so that things could be done or figured out or somebody could be creative and use it in different ways that they want to. I just thought, if it was not meant to happen, it would have been closed off to that option. But because somebody was able to do it, maybe it's meant to be just like a freedom, like freedom of speech, freedom of however you want to use it, like whatever people want to do on it. And so I don't think you technically should block that. But then I think if people worry too much that they want to censor that because they want to make block space cheaper, isn't that why we have layer twos like Lightning and different things where you don't have to worry about transacting on the main blockchain? So there's just so much like around it that it's like, it's hard to comprehend. I do think people get emotional. Like you said, I think it's just getting really overblown. When I was in that space, I'd said something that I thought was kind of like, I don't think people reacted to it, but I'm like, when they were kind of arguing back and forth, I just thought of it as, because they were almost saying like a lot of the things we're disagreeing on are things that maybe we both kind of agree on, but we should just get together and figure this out as like two communities coming together. And I said it reminds me of when two parents fight in front of their kids, you know, and they should just like, because they're stressing everybody out, you know, and really they could just communicate. And if the parents were to communicate and figure out something, then they don't have to put everyone through the stress because they would figure out a solution together. Because I think they both want what's best for Bitcoin. They do. So it's almost like, hey, why don't you guys just go hash it out together, get two different sides together and hash it out, right? Yeah. And then they can come back and tell the kids and tell everybody, okay, this is what we all think is best, you know, as a consensus, you know. But yeah, nobody really said, like, laughed at that. But I thought it was just kind of funny. I'm like... Like you sound like you're just like need to communicate more, guys. Like figure it out.
And again, I'm not the best person to talk about this because people might be critical of this, but again, I've been around the Bitcoin world for a while and there's always new debates and fights that come up and it all like kind of works itself out. And like I said, for me, it's more like it's a spiritual journey at this point. And I know it'll work out for the best. I'm not worried about it.
So. I love that take. That's perfect because.
But I know a lot of people would be like, you can't be like that. You need to be involved. Well, part of the spiritual journey is there's people like you who will be involved and you guys are figuring out. I don't need to like get angry and waste my time on that.
That's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. People would definitely not like that position, but whatever.
But yeah, just being real is what people appreciate, you know? So it's like, and you're right. That's how I feel about it too. I'm more on the side where I just know Bitcoin has already won and I'm not worried about it. I just think that when you look at something like in the small time frame, it can seem very stressful. But I think Bitcoin's shown that it can put up with a lot of, target like attacks against it, and it pulls through. And yeah, I don't think we have anything to worry about. But what you just said reminded me of I was watching this comedian yesterday, and it's just not that it's the same thing, but it sort of reminded me of that. This guy's like, I don't recycle, and he's like, people might hate me because I don't recycle. He's like, but sometimes I go to someone's house and I see like 3 recycling bins outside, and I look at that and I say, yeah, we're going to be good. Like, we'll be good. They're doing their part. They're doing all the recycling for everybody. So he just thinks, like, even though I don't do it, I think we're going to be just fine. Like, I don't have to worry about this. Yeah. But yeah, you see that there are so many people that are passionate and are technologists, and they're very good at, and they care about Bitcoin. So they're going to figure out what's best. And that's not our area. You know, that's not my area.
Yeah. If I really, like, sensed that it was getting to some, like, dire point, you know, maybe I would commit more time myself. I know there are people screaming that it is a dire point now. It's the end of Bitcoin. I can't. To me, that's that. And you're not going to win people over by doing that. Like, because then everyone's just going to, you know, think you're just the boy who cried wolf, right? If you're just screaming, like, everything's coming to an end. And, you know, they may be right, but you're not going to, you know, you're not going to win an argument that way. Right. It's coming from someone who, like, does marketing. You know, if you have to start saying things like, you know, Bitcoin's dead, it's going to be over, no one's going to believe you, because it's been said 1,000 times before.
Right. Yeah.
We see this in politics too all the time, where people lose credibility. They'll say, oh, this person's like Hitler. So you should never call someone Hitler, because even if, like, they're trying to get like philosophical, well, Hitler would say things like this, and this person kind of says like, but like, are they killing people? Are they rounding up people? So that you diminish what you're saying, because then people just write you off right away. Does that make sense?
Yes, 100%. I agree with that totally.
Yeah. Yeah. So even if like there's validity to what you're saying, people will just discount it and write you off altogether, and then you get nothing.
Yeah, so, because it's like people want positivity in their lives, they look toward good energy, and when you just see this bad energy too, and you're not seeing actual proof, you're just like, you're just out here causing me stress, you know. So and it's not like it's actually happening, we're not seeing, you know, visuals or facts or this actually going on. So yeah, it's just you lose your audience, you know, you kind of alienate people.
And I always say, you know, let the market decide. Mm-hmm. You know, if you want to run a different version, keep running it and see how many people you can convince.
Right.
And that's kind of what's happening right now. I know, you know, it's something like 17% of the network is now running this Knots stuff, software, implementation. Yeah, go for it. We'll see how it all plays out.
Yeah, that's how I am too. It's just like eat your popcorn and just watch the show, you know?
Yeah, I'm a note taker these days. You know, I don't get emotionally invested in these kind of things anymore.
Yeah, that's amazing. And I'm right there with you. And I think that sometimes, like, when I think of the big picture of it, everyone's arguing about which node you should run and which one you should run. But when I think of it as how many miners or how many companies are running these nodes, when you think about big companies like BlackRock or Coinbase or any humongous company that has a stake in securing whatever Bitcoin they have, you just probably figure these huge companies have a lot of mining power probably, or they have, or even the mining companies, you know, which way are they going to go? You know, it's like even like Mara Mining and all these other people that are huge. I asked if anybody knows which direction they're leaning toward, and nobody, they said all these big companies are being kind of quiet about it, because sometimes it takes a few years to even, you know, for them to decide which node they're going to run. If they're going to switch, it doesn't happen overnight.
Well,
for big companies,
I don't even know, like, if BlackRock would, first off, BlackRock doesn't, I don't believe they custody the Bitcoin, Coinbase does. So BlackRock doesn't probably, I don't even know if they like run a node.
Yeah.
And again, BlackRock the ETF is owned by shareholders, so it's not like it's just BlackRock who owns all that Bitcoin. Now, this is where it could all get muddy, where like who has the right to making decisions, you know, all this different stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it's technically...
I think the incentives, I really am a strong believer in human incentives playing out in the right way. It's worked out for Bitcoin, for the last 16 years. Stuff doesn't worry me.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad to know that my little BitAx that I'm running, I accidentally probably ran a node somewhere and I'm running one. I just have to probably look into, I never pull up the software. As long as I see it running, I don't go and and check and see how fast it's going or whatever.
Well, there may be a way where you run a Bitcoin miner and you're using someone else's node instead of your own. So that could be how I don't have a BitAx. I'm not even sure
I don't know. That's definitely a possibility. All I know is that I think I chose the solo mining instead of the pool mining option. So I know I did that.
You're like lottery mining.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's not a pool. It's a lotteries. I don't even know. See, that's what I mean. I'm like, I'm a Bitcoiner. I'm doing all these things that are cool. And people would look at me and think I would have no idea. But people that are technical would be like, you're crazy. Why are you doing it this way? Or what did you even set up? Like, you're not doing the right thing. But yeah, it's just fun. I like running it. I guess
if you're running, so let me go back on everything. Mm. I think if you're using a pool, then you might be using their node.
Okay.
So I think that's how it works. But again, I'm not the best person.
Yeah. I'm definitely going to figure this out. This is something I did admit it. I'm like, you know what? People talk about run your own node. And I'm like, am I? I thought Core was a node. It is. You know, I'm running it on my computer if I continue to. But some people are talking about all these other devices and I'm sure it won't be hard to figure out, but I just haven't done it. So I feel like I'm kind of an outsider on that.
I guess you're not running a node. You're using the pools.
No. Okay.
Again,
yeah.
Anyone listening to this can be like, this guy's been around for years. He can't, but this is not my area. So.
Yeah. But that's what I feel like too, because I have all these people that I trust and they're very smart in my community. And they say things like, you know, you're cold storing your Bitcoin, but you don't even run your own node. So what's the point of doing that? And I'm just kind of like, is it that bad? Like, is it because I'm not verifying or not decentralizing it enough?
It's not like about decentralizing it enough. It's about being able to verify that the Bitcoin that is being sent to you, that it's actually happening, instead of trusting the data from someone else's node.
Right. But see, the way I always thought about it was like the whole global network confirms that something happened. And that's always what I thought Bitcoin was. So I was just kind of like.
Right. But you are trusting other people in that network when you don't have to.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. That's the whole self-sovereignty of, you know, not having to trust anyone, verify yourself. You know, I get that. So, it'll be something I want to look into. And I probably will still in the meantime run my, but if you're running Core, are you just running Core's node then? Or are you running your own node?
You're downloading the Core software
Do you see how you're like, this is not my area, and I keep going back at you with more of this stuff? Like, I'm just like, it's like out of all the people, you're the one I'm asking not
questions.
Thanks
a lot.
I'm sorry about that. I'm so ridiculous.
No, it's okay.
But it's fun. It's fun trying to like figure it out with somebody too, you know, that might have, you know, some sort of insight or just not make me feel like I'm crazy for not doing something right. So. But yeah, I know this is not your area, but
there's really smart people on both sides of this debate. So I just am not gonna opine either way. I have my general philosophies about Bitcoin and life, and that's where I'll stick. I should stay in my lane for now because I'm not one to be talking about this stuff.
Yeah. And when it's like your spiritual awakening, like what happened when people hear that sometimes, you know, you want to know what kind of things they experience, like what if somebody hasn't experienced this and if they start to actually go down the rabbit hole, like what kind of things did you go through?
Just everything in my life started to get better once I really came to this point. I mean, I found fulfillment in talking about Bitcoin to people. And again, not the technical aspects as much, but more just the macro, the economics, the philosophy, the game theory, about having an uncorruptible money. You know, I've been able to, when I was a CPA accountant, it was so not fulfilling when I'm helping people with their tax return on what, like, whatever. I feel like I'm really, I helped change people's lives. I've had people come up to me or DM me, be like, thank you so much. Years ago, I used to do a lot more education, and now I don't do as much, which I probably should, because then I'd be more up to date on all these things going on. Yeah, it's basically, I went from a life without as much purpose to one with purpose. And my finances got better, right? Like, I became wealthier being in Bitcoin. I got job opportunities, or I grew a network of people that I never could have imagined, you know, like business owners and entrepreneurs and billionaires. And like, it's like wild. And this never would have happened to me without Bitcoin coming along. Maybe it would have happened in some other timeline of my life with something else. I don't know, but this is what happened. So I guess your question was like, how does someone like know they're on this spiritual? It's just when they've found some sort of like purpose and fulfillment in their life. And that could be through a lot of things. People have, you know, I'm a single guy. People have kids and they find purpose and fulfillment in that. And that could be a spiritual journey for them in some ways. Or in other businesses they work on, or, you know, who knows? Like, but this is just what it was for me.
Did you feel like you just had a different idea also of what you thought was important in your life before Bitcoin? And then just valuing your time now and valuing, you know, the people around you that make you feel good and make you feel like you're, you know, that whole rewarding feeling, like you're actually doing good for the world instead of just, I don't know, but.
Absolutely. But it's a paradox, because then in a sense you become a little more lonely in this world, because there's less people that evolve to this, you know, outlook.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it's a double-edged sword. It's fulfilling, but it also could be a little bit lonely in terms of, you know, I don't have the same amount of friends that I used to have. But then, and if I look at it now, like, what is a friendship? And right. What is, like, the average person call a friend, you know, versus how I perceive a friend? You know, for me, it's morphed over the years into who do I provides value to me, and I provide value to them, because the only scarce thing in this world other than Bitcoin is my time, right? So if you're not providing value to me, what's going on? Whether it's you're helping me make money, whether it's you're someone I could talk to when I have issues, and I, you know, or it's anything that's going to add value. I'm not saying like you have to make me more money, right? But anything that's going to add up, or else, like, what's the point of the friendship? Just right. So I could like say like I'm friends with this person. Well, then, yeah, maybe that makes sense. But that's more like if that matters in your career or something like that, like your network. I get it. Look, I'm in marketing, so sometimes like appearances help you. But in terms of like what's an actual friendship, it's, are you adding value to my life?
Right. Do you actually enjoy spending time with this person?
Right.
Because sometimes I think people, they're friends with people and it's more just for, you know, appearances or social circles, or just to kind of almost show off to each other, you know, a lot of times their material wealth. And then you start to, that stuff starts to sort of, the materialism, I think, sort of just irks you after a while when you actually understand, you know, the waste, you know, that people that have a lot, but they think they don't need to go find an answer yet because it doesn't bother them yet. But just knowing that you feel bad for them at the same time, you also feel like, I want to teach you about this because one day it might start affecting you.
And yeah, no, I don't have that anymore.
Yeah.
I don't feel bad. No, like, yeah. That's, I don't feel bad because it's a waste of time and energy when, you know, it's almost on the same, like, in the same area when people like, I don't try to convince people about Bitcoin anymore because there's so many people who want to learn about Bitcoin. Why am I going to focus my energy on that? And it's the same thing, like feeling bad. Like, what am I feeling bad for? Like, they're just plugged in, right? The matrix, as we say. And that's fine. Like, it has... What do I need to feel bad about that?
Well, and then you're fighting against a force that's not willing because, and that's exactly where I'm at too, because I have been talking about Bitcoin for years at work, you know, to clients that sort of asked me about it, but I never really, you know, they were super interested. They acted like they were really interested, but I never had, maybe a handful of people came back and said they bought it. And that's fine, but I got sort of tired of repeating the same thing to people that have zero idea what I'm talking about, knowing if they're ever going to take anything that I'm saying and actually do something with it. So by starting this podcast, I actually loved it because if anyone knows that I've been into Bitcoin, they all of a sudden start asking again, I could just be like, hey, watch my show. You know, if you watch some of these people or hear what I have to say on there, this is like all my thoughts just out there for everybody. So if you want to take the time and learn it and then that way I get to spend my time talking to people like you, talking to other Bitcoiners, who actually can, you know, we're having a good conversation, but it could also teach other people if they just tune in, you know, and I'm not repeating myself all day. So I also feel like I had kind of given up with, you know, doing that. I don't want to waste my time repeating myself that way, but I love talking to Bitcoiners. This is my favorite thing ever.
Yeah. And I'm not saying you should never try to convince someone but who doesn't want to be convinced, but that's like so limited.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you know the guy American Hoddle.
Mm-hmm.
I think he said like trying to orange pill someone is basically like I'm paraphrasing this, saying I love you. So if it's someone you really care about and love and you want to try, go for it. And I'm not saying you should never try, but for me, all the people I love in my life, they know by now. And if they don't, it's just like a waste of time for me.
Yeah.
Because, and I've kind of led by example where they see all the things I do and then they gradually came to me.
Yes.
But like 5-6 years ago, I tried to tell them, they didn't want to hear it. Some of them. And the ones who did listen to it or have been very rewarded.
Well, that's a great point because it's the leading by example, what you were saying earlier about if you're just that guy out there yelling at everybody about something, then they're just going to think you're aggressive or you're just trying to say it's a doomsday thing, you know, because fiat is collapsing and all this stuff is happening. So they're just going to not want to listen, you know. But if you lead by example and you live by the principles that you were, you know, that you learned along your journey and, you know, and how you live your life now, it's people then just want to start asking you the questions. And that's kind of another thing too. I had a friend that I orange pilled recently, but he literally was skeptical about Bitcoin. He had gotten XRP because someone told him to, and I didn't say anything to him besides what he asked me. So whatever he asked me a question about Bitcoin, he was genuinely curious to find something that he would say, okay, well, this is the part that you don't know how to answer, so that's what makes me skeptical. But whenever he asked me a question, I had an answer for him, and he asked me questions for like 2 straight hours. And I made sure to keep my part on the short side so he could come back with another question, but it was because he was curious, you know. So you know that when somebody is curious and they're asking you, they want to know. But I think if you're just talking to someone for 2 straight hours and they're just like sitting there waiting for you to stop, you know, that's not going to be beneficial for either of you.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think we're on the same boat. We're definitely not the type of people who want to attack people with Bitcoin and tell them to do it, but spending more time.
It was a blessing for me, actually, because part of the reason so like 2019, like I said, 2019, 2020 started getting orange pilled. And at that point, when you first get it, you want to tell everyone, right? A lot of people. And I wanted to tell all my friends and none of them wanted to listen. So it was actually a blessing in disguise because then I went to social media and found a community of people who wanted to listen about this. So I can thank those, you know, people in my life at the time for being so dismissive about it, for really actually helping me take the next step. Because it's like, oh, they don't want to talk about it. I'll go and then look at all these good things that happen. So, right. You know, it's interesting.
That's so true. Yeah, it's actually...
Like, if everyone in your close circle all wanted to talk about Bitcoin all the time, maybe you wouldn't branch out as much to do a podcast or find out where other people are learning about Bitcoin. So it's actually like, just say thank you for ignoring me or being dismissive or being angry about it. You know, thank you.
That's so true. Because that's another thing that Jeff Booth says, like, about your journey is, you know, finding out that the more time you spend in Bitcoin or the more time you spend around the people that that energize you and, you know, you help each other, you know, this whole network is just something that, you know, you spend more of your time in it and you spend more of your time in Bitcoin and you actually you don't know where things could lead. Like, it's still such an early space that the connections you make, you know, you just don't know in a couple years, like, how much your life could change. Like, you know, you going from being an accountant to now, you know, making these awesome t-shirts, but you're also, you know, doing all the marketing for all the Bitcoin stuff. And it's something you enjoy. Like, I've talked to so many Bitcoiners who work in Bitcoin and it's not exhausting. Like, because it's fulfilling, you know, if you had your other job before, you would have worked the same amount of hours, but you would feel drained and depressed, you know, just, you know, kind of just like, I don't know, just not good. But then when you spend time doing something that's rewarding, you actually feel energy. That's just something I hear from a lot of people.
Yeah, I think that there's a lot of truth to that, but I think people still have to be careful in terms of just be like, I want to work in Bitcoin. I want to work for a Bitcoin company. Well, that I'll tell you my thought process on all that. So, you know, rewind like 5 years ago, full-time CPA, didn't do anything in the Bitcoin space, then slowly just started, you know, running these Clubhouse rooms. I had a podcast. I don't know if you know that.
No, I didn't realize. Ago.
Yeah, it was called Inside Bitcoin. It was with, do you know who Joe Carlisari is?
Yes.
He's a lawyer. So him and I used to do a podcast. We did it for a year and a half. We did like over 50 episodes.
Wow.
But I was still working full-time as a CPA, but I was, you know, I was promoting conferences, but again, full-time. And I was really hesitant of working full-time in Bitcoin for a lot of reasons. One, my entire net worth was already in Bitcoin. So it's like, okay, now I'm going to attach the cash flows, my income, to Bitcoin companies as well. Like, that's, you know, you're adding risk there, obviously, in the short term. And Bitcoin companies are very volatile. A lot of them in the whole go boom and bust. I mean, especially more on the crypto side, but Bitcoin specifically, it's still like volatile. It's hard. They don't pay a lot of money, a lot of Bitcoin companies. And another like hesitation for me was I didn't want to lose that joy and fulfillment. And I thought, oh, if it becomes a job, maybe I'll lose some of that. So I actually like was holding off for a long time. So if someone's listening to this and they find themselves in that position, like, it's not bad to like, it doesn't make you a bad person for not working in the Bitcoin space. It could be coming from a completely like rational and logical point of view. But at a certain point, mid 2023, I was talking to Corey, the CEO of Swan, and we kind of came to an agreement, and I was kind of just done with accounting. I'm like, whatever, I'm gonna go for it. And it was great. I was there almost a year. I was the head of brand engagement for Swan, so I helped lead the social media team, affiliate program. But then, you know, I don't know how much you paid attention to the space, but they had an issue. They had to lay off like almost 70 people, I think, or half the company. I don't know the numbers at the time, and I was one of those people. So literally everything I thought could happen with a Bitcoin company in terms of the volatility did happen, but it was a great experience. I still talk with those guys, you know, it's not like there's any hard feelings. But it gave me a chance to double down on some of the other things I was working on, like in parallel, you know, my merch company, promoting conferences. Then I ended up contracting with a Bitcoin mining company for 6 months and helping them with their marketing team. As their CMO advisor. So, you know,
crazy.
One door led to another. And then that ended maybe end of March. the work I was doing with them. And then after that, I'm like, you know what? I'm going to double down even harder on my own things. FOMO 21 and promoting these conferences. And then if other things come along, you know, I'll be open to them. And I've had people reach out to me, and so far, just nothing has materialized. But yeah, I it's nice to have, you know, this empowerment that I have now. And yeah, so I guess that would be my thought about working in the Bitcoin space or working for a Bitcoin company. And remember, you don't have to go full time into Bitcoin to work, quote unquote, work in the Bitcoin space. You can start a podcast. And this is work to do a podcast. Even if you're not getting paid, and I don't know if you have sponsors or anything like that, it's still work to do. So any kind of like contributions you're doing in the Bitcoin space, you don't have to like quit your job overnight. You could do both or have a slow transition. You don't have to go all in. And I think people just need to be careful about thinking they need to go all in.
Right.
Right.
Well, that's a great point, because you're right. You could do it. And even so, even whatever happened with you, you made connections, you know, along the way. You have people that you still, you stay in contact with. That stuff is all valuable time that you spent with certain people, and you connected. But even like for the space you were doing, you know, people that are doing, you know, spaces right now, talking to other Bitcoiners, I hear spaces all the time. I mean, in my community, that so many connections are being made, and people are making actual, like, people that get them, because a lot of us don't have friends in real life that we actually, you know, want to spend our time with.
It's a lonely existence. I told you.
Right. Yeah. And it feels like, you know, when you actually find people online, you think, man, that would be so cool if these people were around me, because those are, you know, it would be fun to hang out with them. But you make these connections online. You're working in Bitcoin without getting paid. You know, you could be doing these spaces, but you just never know where that'll take you. You know, it's just by doing something that you're good at, whether it's speaking or creating or whatever kind of thing it is that you do. If you just put it out there, you just don't know where those turns, like how your life will change, you know.
And even though you might not be getting paid directly, every person is adding value to the Bitcoin world. Don't get me wrong. If like an asteroid fell on my head tomorrow, like Bitcoin would be just fine without me. But without anyone, you know, it's everyone's adding a little bit of value. So you might not be getting paid, but you are adding value to your wealth over the long run. And you get to help other people. Like, what could be, like, to me, that's like the point of life, is to make, you know, the lives of people, your life and the people around you, their lives better.
Yeah. And even like some of the people that have watched my show, getting feedback and hearing from people how much they enjoy certain episodes. And, you know, I've had people say they've cried from watching some of my episodes. It's just like the emotion that's connected to hearing a conversation where it feels like a real conversation. Just hearing that is so rewarding for me. But even just talking to you and talking to any of my guests, it's so much fun to get to know other people, and people see that, and people can, you know, can appreciate it. And it makes people happy. You know, it's something, and that's another thing. I was in Bitcoin all these years, watching the technical stuff, watching all these podcasts to learn. But I just really wanted more of the salon talk that I get at work, but with Bitcoiners. Like, I wanted to have that real, you know, just like it is in a place. Like, I know there aren't a lot of places like a salon where people just have conversations. You know, it's not like a barbershop everywhere you go. But I wanted to bring that into the Bitcoin space. And I think people do appreciate it. And at first it made me nervous, because I thought, who's going to want to talk to me? I don't know everything. You know, I'm just somebody who just is a Bitcoin fan.
But again, like I said earlier, you don't need to know everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And no one knows everything.
Mm-hmm.
Even the people who are, they're on Twitter, yell about a lot of things, and you could figure out who those people are. Like, they're know-it-alls. They don't fucking know everything. Mm. Yeah, excuse my language, but
no, that's okay. I said I find it a personal victory when I hear an F-bomb on my show anyway, so it happened.
But yeah, no, I mean, they don't know everything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So just, you know, you got to do what works for you and believe in yourself. And that's enough.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you so much. And it's really been amazing, because even just spending the time that I'm spending in this space, having people like you join me and having, you know, any big or small name. I find every conversation to me is really interesting. Like, there's always really cool stuff about people that I find out that I love sharing. But seeing how my channel's grown, it's like proof of work. You know, it's the work that I've put in since, I guess, February when I started. I am starting to get like affiliate link type things, but not necessarily the sponsorships. But I feel that it going from where I started only in February, it's a huge accomplishment. I already feel very grateful and happy that anyone's watching this. So I'm just really happy.
Yeah, it's all about putting yourself out there. You know, I was on a Twitter space and that's how, yeah, I found out about you. I'm just listening to, oh, this is cool. And, you know, I DM'd you saying that, like, congrats on your podcast. And look, now we're talking here.
Yeah.
And there, you're going to have moments like that. Mm-hmm. You know, not with everyone, but the Bitcoin world has given so much to me that anytime I could connect with someone else and if I could do something for them or help them in any way, or they hopefully maybe they'll be able to help me. Not that I'm like looking for any like quid pro quo ever, but it's just, it's cool. Yeah. And why wouldn't you want to like pay that forward to other people?
Yeah. And that's why I was so glad when you reached out too, because, you know, even talking in spaces, I feel like I talk enough here, you know, I don't really need to be doing the spaces. I sometimes feel who even wants to hear me talk, because a lot of the people in my community hear me enough. They probably don't want to hear me some more. But it's always fun. Like, people always like hearing each other speak, and I'm glad.
You never
that,
know.
Yeah.
And, you never know who's listening. Right. Either they could be listening anonymously. They could be listening as a NIM account, right? Like a, you know, a fake Twitter account they have. Mm-hmm. They could have come across your podcast or YouTube on YouTube accidentally. And then it sparks something. Sorry, I interrupted you.
No, it's fine. Totally. But that's I love that you say that too, because you were listening and you reached out. And it's just like when you find people that it would be, you know, fun to join the podcast or whatever, I just asked, you know, and you were really, really nice and saying that, you know, you heard me speak. I think it was about my husband, and that's why you sent us both a shirt. And I couldn't remember which one it was, but I'm like, it must have been, I think, that one Saturday morning space when I was talking about how gullible I was before Bitcoin. I think, I don't know if that's the one you heard.
I can't remember the exact conversation, yeah. But yeah.
But it's funny because sometimes even on a Saturday, I should be working. I was actually at the salon. If it was that Saturday, I should have been working and I had clients waiting for me over there. And I'm like, hold on, let me just talk on this Twitter space real quick because I can for a few minutes. So, but it's fun for me, you know, so, and I'm glad it's nice to have connected with you and thank you so much for everything and for joining me and for reaching out and joining the, you know, the Bitcoin Army space, because that's kind of the only ones I talk on right now. So
yeah. So when am I going to meet you in person? Have you gone to any Bitcoin conferences?
Yes, I had me and my husband went to Vegas this past year. It was our first Bitcoin conference.
I wish I knew you then. I would have been able to say hello.
Yeah, I was trying to like spot people. We didn't go to any after parties or anything like that. We were kind of funny. We would just go to the conference. We met up with a bunch of friends that we met on X, you know, so we actually had like a little meetup. It was awesome. We met up a few times with them, but while everyone was going to after parties, we were just kind of like sitting in a casino, like trying to like guess if people were going to go back into their purse or not for more money. And it was just like, we're such weirdos. We're sitting here watching other people gamble and trying to like, we're laughing to ourselves. Like, I'm like, if anyone knew that we missed an after party to sit here and kind of spy on people, it's so hilarious. But yeah, I'm going next year. So me and my husband are going to be there. We got those free tickets that they were offering after we went to the last one. So we'll be in Vegas.
Okay.
So you'll be there. Be in Vegas again next year.
So you'll be there. But nothing before that?
Before that, well, Oh, hi, Ben. How are you? Sorry. That's my next one. So we're going to have to... Hey, Ben, I'm going to finish up with this one. I didn't realize that it's all connected.
I'll get off.
Okay. I'll be finishing up. Be on in a minute.
Leave. I'm leaving.
Okay. Sounds good.
I thought that was your husband joining for a second.
No.
I thought it was like a
surprise. No, he's my next one.
Has that ever happened on a podcast?
Never. Before? I've never.
Well, I'm happy I could be your first.
Yeah. And he was supposed to, I thought he was supposed to be at 12:30. So I'm like blushing right now. Wow. So yeah, I would like to go to more, but what I am doing is I'm on the Orange Pill app, and I don't know where you're located, but I'm in like near Chicago.
I'm in Florida.
Okay. So I don't think I'll be traveling.
If you and your husband are in Florida, come say hello.
Okay.
South Florida.
What part of Florida are you?
Fort Lauderdale area.
Okay. Because his sister just bought a house in Naples, so I don't know how close that is.
It's like an hour and a half. But there's actually, there's a lot of like Bitcoin meetups that happen in Naples and stuff like that. So
okay. Yeah, so I'm going to be doing a couple meetups in Chicago for the first time. I think there's some kind of every Wednesday at the end of the month thing that I'm going to be going to for the first time. And then we're going to someone's house that they're doing some kind of Illinois policy, like trying to like talk to politicians. I don't know. So it'll be fun. And I'm looking forward to meeting them in real life. Yeah.
Nothing until Vegas. No conferences.
No. What else do you have? What other conferences are there?
Well, next month there's the BTC and DC conference.
Mm-hmm.
So that's being hosted by George Washington University. And there'll be a lot of familiar faces there. I think Jeff Booth's going to be there, Sailor, Natalie Brunel.
Okay.
Also next month, there's one, the Bitcoin Treasuries Unconference.
Okay.
That's in New York City. The one that's in DC is more like a, more of a traditional conference.
Uh-huh.
But it's the first time they're doing it. And it's at the Kennedy Center in DC.
Are you going to be at them, both of
I'll
those?
I'll be at both.
Okay.
So if anyone last minute wants to come, a month away.
Yeah.
DC's September 30th and October 1st.
Yeah, we'll share those links because even though I want people to have more time to go, you know, so I don't want to wait till I might have to wait a couple episodes to put this one out. But send me links or whatever, I'll find them and I'll share it with people too. So if they see anything and
I'm always tweeting about them on my X, I guess. I'm always posting about it on X just because I help promote them. Mm-hmm. But yeah, promo code FOMO, like I told
you,
I'll get you a discount.
I will be sharing them then.
So,
well, thank you so much for joining me today. I know that you know I have someone waiting, so
good luck with Ben, was it? Good luck
with Ben. Yes. Okay. But thank you so much, and looking forward to meeting you in real life.